Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Dorothy Gundy and I will bring you a story, along with Brian Lynn and Pete Musto. Later, for American Stories, Shep O'Neill will present the story Feathertop by Nathaniel Hawthorne. But first, it is a dangerous time to be a child in Yemen. Besides facing war, hunger, and poverty, more than 25% of children are not in school. But 8-year-old singer Amr Mukbel, known as the water seller, is different. He attends school in the morning. In the afternoons, he used to sell water to help support his family. Now he makes extra money singing for weddings, fans, and several major Arabic news channels. "I'm proud he has become a singer," said Ahmed Mukbel, Amr's 70-year-old father, with tears in his eyes. "One of their relatives is a soldier," he added, "and Amr used to sing war songs."
Now he sings about love and peace in a country where other children can be forced to join military groups. Children out of school face increased risks of all forms of exploitation, including being forced to join the fighting, child labor, and early marriage, said Sarah Nayanti, UNICEF's representative in Yemen, in a statement. Teachers in the schools have not been paid in more than 2 years. As the war continues, danger for children outside of the school system deepens, workers for aid organizations say.
Amr first became well known this year when a local hiker recorded him singing to a group of people. The hiker posted the recording on Facebook, where it received 20,000 likes, loves, and sad faces. Since then, the boy appears on Arab media regularly. He has appeared on BBC Arabic, Al Jazeera Arabic, and RT Arabic.
Amr's family remains poor, however. He, his mother, and his 4 siblings still struggle to survive in a small house. But as Amr gains the attention of music professionals, the family hopes his voice will lift them further out of poverty. "I didn't even know Amr was singing for the drivers," said Amr's mother, Manira, near her Sena home. "I used to reprimand Amr for singing while he did his homework."
Sobi Mohammed is a renowned Syrian-Kurdish music writer from Lebanon. He has expressed interest in mentoring Amr, inviting him through an online video to visit Lebanon. Mohammed has mentored other young people with musical skills, like Nomer El Beek and Amir Amouri from Syria. "I was like Amr while still a little boy," Mohammed said in an online report. "I promised myself that I would assist every talented child who had no one."
Amr has not gone to Lebanon because of passport delays and competing ideas about his future. His father wants to go to Lebanon so Amr can try to get into the professional music business. His mother wants Amr to continue to be mentored locally so he can sing more often at weddings to increase the family's income. "I believe Amr will become a star," Sobi Mohammed said. He has the voice and charisma.
Publicly, Amr has accepted Mohammed's invitation in an online video. Some of his local fans do not want him to leave. His songs come out from his heart, said Mohammed Al-Adaimi, a 23-year-old who listens to Amr's songs on YouTube. He should stay and sing for us, and we will support him. Al-Adaimi is concerned Amr's musical style might change if he trains in Lebanon. He might learn a more common Lebanese style of Arab music. Other local people said they are proud that a young Yemeni is getting international attention. He is a talented boy, said Mabruk al-Bakash, who has been listening to Amr sing for 8 months. It's fine to travel to Lebanon.
New research suggests that planting trees and other plants near factories could reduce pollution by almost one-third. The addition of plant life may even cost less and be more effective than technology designed to cut pollution, a new study found. The findings were reported in the publication Environmental Science and Technology. The lead author of the study was Bhavik Bakshi. He is a professor of chemical and biomolecular engineering at The Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. Bakshi and other researchers collected data about air pollution and plant life in 48 of the 50 American states. They studied public records from every state other than Alaska and Hawaii. The researchers knew that trees and plants are already capturing large amounts of harmful emissions from the air. So they attempted to find out whether new vegetation could lessen air pollution's effects. The study attempted to show how this vegetation could reduce the most common pollutants from industrial areas, including the production of energy from coal, oil, and gas. The researchers found that restoring vegetation to land cover where possible could cut air pollutant levels an average of 27% in the areas studied. They also found that in 75% of the areas, it would cost less to use plants and trees to reduce air pollution than to add new air cleaning technology. The fact is that traditionally, especially as engineers, we don't think about nature, Bakshi said in a statement. We just focus on putting technology into everything. People seeking to solve air pollution problems need to start looking at nature and learning from it and respecting it, Bakshi said. He added that nature-based methods could result in win-win solutions that save money and are better for the environment. The study found that in most cases, less money would be spent creating vegetation solutions than building and operating air cleaning equipment. It found that only one piece of equipment was estimated to be more cost-effective than trees and plants. That device is an industrial boiler. The research suggested that in manufacturing, both natural solutions and technology could offer cost savings, depending on the kind of factory. The study did not identify which kinds of trees or plants would be best at reducing air pollution. But Bakshi said the kind of vegetation likely would make a difference in air quality and that further study is needed. The researchers predicted that the addition of trees and plants could help lower air pollution levels in both cities and rural areas. However, success rates would differ widely depending on how much land was available and current air quality levels. I'm Brian Lin.
A South African alcohol maker says it is using bodily waste from elephants to make the popular drink called gin. Les and Paula Ansley are the creators of Indlovu Gin. They came across the idea a year ago during a safari. They learned that elephants eat many kinds of fruits and flowers. However, the animals' bodies only process less than a third of the plant material they eat. Ansley told the Associated Press that weeks after their trip, his wife woke him up in the middle of the night with the idea. Ansley recalled his wife suggesting, "Why don't we let the elephants do the hard work of collecting all these botanicals, and we will make gin from it?" Ansley noted that elephant waste, or dung, possesses the plant material called botanicals. They are substances often used in gin production to add to the taste. The first load of elephant dung came by mail from the park where the Ansleys had taken their safari. Then the two scientists began searching for the best way to use elephant waste in the gin-making process. Now they collect the dung themselves, using their hands. They described the gin's taste as lovely, wooded, almost spicy, earthy. The taste, they say, changes a little with the seasons and location. The gin bottles are marked with the date and location of where the elephant dung was collected. So you're able to compare almost different vintages of the gin, Ansley said. It takes about 5 large bags of elephant dung to make between 3,000 and 4,000 bottles of the gin. The elephant waste is first dried and broken down into small pieces. Then it is washed to remove dirt and sand. Eventually, only the remains of fruits, flowers, and other plant materials are kept. Harmful bacteria and germs are then removed from the botanicals, which are dried again and placed in an airing container. Think of it like a spice cupboard, Ansley said. Eventually, the remains are added to the gin. The Ansleys test the gin on their friends before explaining how they make it. The initial reaction of most people is, "What? There's no way." But most people are very keen to actually taste it, Ansley said. And once people hear about elephants' digestive process, it becomes a lot clearer to them, and they accept it very well. The Ansleys decided to name the djinn Indlovu, which means elephant in the Zulu language. They did not say how much of the djinn they have sold. A bottle sells for about 500 rand, or about $32. The djinn is popular with travelers seeking an unusual gift and a story to tell when they return home. One South African visitor, Elsabe Hanekom, said she felt closer to the animals after touching their waist. So having a piece of them actually feels good. An export of the African experience, I would say. After a drink, another guest, Jade Badenhorst, noted, "Interesting, very tasty, very nice. I didn't expect to be able to drink a gin smoothly. I'm Pete Musto."
Our story today is called Feather Top. It was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
The long cold winter was gone at last. At first, the cold nights went away slowly. Then, suddenly, the warm days of spring started to come. There was new life again in the earth. Things started to grow and come up. For the first time, green corn plants began to show. They pushed through the soil and could now be seen above the ground. After the long winter months, the crows, the big black birds, were hungry. And when they saw the little green plants, they flew down to eat them. Old Mother Rigby tried to make the noisy and hungry birds go away. They made her very angry. She did not want the blackbirds to eat her corn, but the birds would not go away. So, early one morning, just as the sun started to rise, Mother Rigby jumped out of bed. She had a plan to stop those black birds from eating her corn. Mother Rigby could do anything. She was a witch, a woman with strange powers. She could make water run uphill or change a beautiful woman into a white horse. Many nights, when the moon was full and bright, she could be seen flying over the tops of the houses in the village, sitting on a long wooden stick. It was a broomstick, and it helped her to do all sorts of strange tricks. Mother Rigby ate a quick breakfast and then started to work on her broomstick. She was planning to make something that would look like a man. It would fill the birds with fear and scare them from eating her corn, the way most farmers protect themselves from those black, pesky birds. Mother Rigby worked quickly. She held her magic broomstick straight and then tied another piece of wood across it. And already it began to look like a man with arms. Then she made the head. She put a pumpkin, a vegetable the size of a football, on top of the broomstick. She made two small holes in the pumpkin for eyes and made another cut lower down that looked just like a mouth. At last, there he was. He seemed ready to go to work for Mother Rigby and stop those old birds from eating her corn. But Mother Rigby was not happy with what she made. She wanted to make her scarecrow look better and better, for she was a good worker. She made a purple coat and put it around her scarecrow and dressed it in white silk stockings. She covered him with false hair and an old hat. And in that hat, she stuck the feather of a bird. She examined him closely and decided she liked him much better now, dressed up in a beautiful coat with a fine feather on top of his hat, and she named him Feathertop. She looked at Feathertop and laughed with happiness. "He is a beauty," she thought. "Now what?" she thought, feeling troubled again. She felt that Feathertop looked too good to be a scarecrow. "He can do something better," she thought, "than just stand near the corn all summer and scare the crows." And she decided on another plan for Feathertop. She took the pipe of tobacco she was smoking and put it into the mouth of Feathertop. "Puff, darling, puff," she said to Feathertop. "Puff away, my fine fellow. It is your life." Smoke started to rise from Feathertop's mouth. At first, it was just a little smoke, but Feathertop worked hard, blowing and puffing, and more smoke came out of him. "Puff away, my pet," Mother Rigby said with happiness. "Puff away, my pretty one. Puff for your life, I tell you." Mother Rigby then ordered Feathertop to walk. "Go forward," she said. "You have a world before you." Feathertop put one hand out in front of him, trying to find something for support. At the same time, he pushed one foot forward with great difficulty. But Mother Rigby shouted and ordered him on, and soon he began to go forward. Then she said, "You look like a man, and you walk like a man. Now I order you to talk like a man." Feathertop gasped, struggled, and at last said in a small whisper, "Mother, I want to speak, but I have no brain. What can I say?"
"Ah, you can speak," Mother Rigby answered. "What shall you say? Have no fear. When you go out into the world, you will say 1,000 things and say them 1,000 times. And saying them 1,000 times again and again, you still will be saying nothing. So just talk. Babble like a bird. Certainly you have enough of a brain for that."
Mother Rigby gave Feathertop much money and said,
"Now you are as good as any of them and can hold your head high with importance."
But she told Feathertop that he must never lose his pipe and must never let it stop smoking. She warned him that if his pipe ever stopped smoking, he would fall down and become just a bundle of sticks again. "Have no fear, Mother,"
Feathertop said in a big voice, and blew a big cloud of smoke out of his mouth. On your way, Mother Rigby said, pushing Feathertop out the door. The world is yours, and if anybody asks you for your name, just say Feathertop. For you have a feather in your hat and a handful of feathers in your empty head. Feathertop found the streets in town, and many people started to look at him. They looked at his beautiful purple coat and his white silk stockings, and at the pipe he carried in his left hand, which he put back into his mouth every 5 steps he walked. They thought that he was a visitor of great importance. What a fine, noble face, one man said. He surely is somebody, said another, a great leader of men. As Feathertop walked along one of the quieter streets near the edge of town, he saw a very pretty girl standing in front of a small red brick house. A little boy was standing next to her. The pretty girl smiled at Feathertop, and love entered her heart. It made her whole face bright with sunlight. Feathertop looked at her and had a feeling he never knew before. Suddenly, everything seemed a little different to him. The air was filled with a strange excitement. The sunlight glowed along the road, and people seemed to dance as they moved through the streets. Feathertop could not stop himself and walked toward the pretty, smiling young girl. As he got closer, the little boy at her side pointed his finger at Feathertop and said, "Look, Polly! The man has no face. It is a pumpkin." Feathertop moved no closer, but turned around and hurried through the streets of the town toward his home. When Mother Rigby opened the door, she saw Feathertop shaking with emotion. He was puffing on his pipe with great difficulty and making sounds like the clatter of sticks or the rattling of bones. "What's wrong?" Mother Rigby asked. "I am nothing, Mother. I am not a man. I am just a puff of smoke. I want to be something more than just a puff of smoke." And Feathertop took his pipe and with all his strength smashed it against the floor. He fell down and became a bundle of sticks as his pumpkin face rolled toward the wall. "Poor Feathertop," Mother Rigby said, looking at the heap on the floor. "He was too good to be a scarecrow, and he was too good to be a man. But he will be happier, standing near the corn all summer and protecting it from the birds. So I will make him a scarecrow again."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.